says, hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls go doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo.
No, that's Lou Reed as we take you home on the drive home at 5 again with yours truly, Curtis Sliwa. And I remember when that song was a hit, Lou Reed and others were down on the Lower East Side, the Alphabet Jungle. That's where I was living at the time, Avenue A in St. Mark's Place. And it was Spike City. Men and women would travel great distances to come into the Alphabet Jungle, Avenues A, B, C, and D, to score their heroin. They'd be lined up for their P-dope, and they'd be spiking up right in the middle of the street, just like Lou Reed himself was doing. You know, he went through the same kind of ordeal, his love and his hate relationship with heroin like so many others. And then it seemed to disappear for a while. It was still there, but certainly below the surface. And now it's exploded in its use with a vengeance, and really almost as part of a two-part drug misusage that has been taking place both in the homes and the streets of America. First, the opioid explosion, the pain management pills that came from the pharmaceutical industry, written up by the doctors in script, were being given out in many instances like candy to the users, some of whom abused it. And so first it was in the legal marketplace, the abuse, and then it worked its way into the black marketplace. There was a crackdown, particularly here in the state of New York, counting the number of pills that could be written up for you at any given time. And then as a result, the flow of cheap heroin and synthetic heroin coming across the border from Mexico filled the void for the addicts. And now we see stat after stat indicating that across America, the opioid and heroin addiction rate are killing more people per capita, per person now than they ever have before. And especially in Nassau County, it's been a severe problem. So they have decided to lead, and other counties are starting to follow, as they have targeted several pharmaceutical companies, Nassau County has, to actually sue them as a result of their manufacture of the opioid products that have led to this epidemic. On the line to discuss this, Jeff Reynolds. He's president and CEO of Family and Children's Association. Thanks for joining us on the Drive Home at 5 again, Jeff.
It's always a pleasure, Curtis.
Okay, so I'm saying to myself, all right, I understand big pharmacy, they got big pockets, they got a phalanx of lawyers, they're always being sued, but they're just the manufacturers of the product. Why are they being targeted by Nassau County?
You know, I think Nassau County's theory is that the industry for years just churned out pain pills left and right, without regard to and without properly educating consumers about the potential addictive property of these medications, without making them crush proof. And that technology has existed for a long time. I mean, if we had made, you know, OxyContin, Opana, Percocet crush proof, you know, 5-6 years ago, we'd be in a very different place right about now. But I think Nassau and other municipalities across the country are trying to figure out a way to get back some of the costs associated with this crisis. You know, when you think about the police overtime costs, you think about the cost of incarcerating addicts who commit crimes, you think about the Medicaid expenditures when folks show up in an emergency room, you think about the cost of petty crime in the streets, those costs begin to mount up. And quite frankly, this issue and this issue alone is contributing to the bankruptcy of many, many counties across the country. And so the theory here is, you know, you produce these medications, you made a whole bunch of money, you ought to play some role in helping us to clean up the mess.
Okay, the medications you said originally were made and they weren't crush proof, but yeah. Having learned from that, has the pharmaceutical industry put into place the manufacturing standards to make sure that they are now crush proof, those products that they make available to doctors to write for prescriptions?
Some are crush proof and some are not. Some still lack the technology. And in some cases, you know, the pharmaceutical industry is still aggressively marketing these pills. They're marketing them for chronic pain. And quite frankly, these pills were never designed for chronic pain. They were designed for acute pain, short-term duration kind of stuff. You now have people on long-term opioid therapy, and you've probably seen the commercials as I have about opioid-induced constipation on TV, as if that's the worst side effect you can suffer from long-term opioid use. The reality is you have tens of thousands of people, you know, across the tri-state area who are struggling with opioid addiction. Yes, they put the pill into their bodies. Yes, some doctors prescribed it. There's a whole bunch of shared responsibility here, but the pharmaceutical industry has been laughing all the way to the bank for more than a decade now, despite a well-documented problem.
All right. I understand that. They manufacture it. They obviously make it available to doctors. But every day I get Long Island Newsday. Occasionally I check Channel 12, News 12, which covers the area. And a lot of times the leading stories are about doctors, both in private practice and who work at Medicaid mills, who are writing thousands, tens of thousands of prescriptions knowingly to addicts who are addicted to these substances. Okay, eventually they get cherry-picked by the state attorney general or a opioid task force. One will get arrested. They'll lose their license. They'll end up going away and doing time. But the practice continues, and that's where the source of the legal distribution of the opioids takes place. And yet I don't see a real focus and crackdown there.
Yeah, I would love to see more of that. There have been a number of high-profile arrests in Nassau and Suffolk. You know, we, on a regular basis, when we hear from patients the same doctor's name again and again and again, you know, we quickly turn those names over to DEA and to the state attorney general for prosecution. You know, every time I see one of these guys prosecuted and he simply loses his license as opposed to going to jail like the average drug dealer, it drives me nuts. So I think there's more than enough shared responsibility here. Responsibility goes across the board. I think one of the struggles now is, so how do we finance an appropriate response? How do we come up with the dollars necessary to fight this, the dollars for prevention and treatment and recovery support? You know, we're in the middle of an unprecedented crisis. And as you know, it's not getting any better. The deaths just continue to mount. If we're going to clean this up, it takes everybody at the table, including the folks who produce the prescriptions in the first place.
All right. Hypothetically, let's say law enforcement cracks down on the doctors who are abusive in terms of the script they're writing for opioids. The pharmaceutical industry is just beaten fiscally into a situation in which they're abiding by rules to limit the amount of damage they can do with the product they distribute. But we've seen there are foreign countries who knock off all of our drugs, from Viagra right on to drugs that are very difficult to come by or very expensive. So what happens if India or other third world countries just start knocking off these opioids, massively sending them across our borders into our country and feeding the beast? Then what do you do?
Well, we don't have to wonder if that's going to happen. It's already happening. And you've probably heard the stories about fentanyl contamination in heroin batches. And fentanyl is being produced in mass in China and then exported to the United States and added to heroin packets. And it's not the kind of fentanyl you would get from a pharmacy. This is a batch that's mixed up in some factory in China using slave labor. And so that's already happening. You know, we've pushed the federal government to lock some of that down, to increase border patrol. You know, very often we talk about in the treatment field about how we don't necessarily want to see resources spent on law enforcement. In this case, we absolutely need that law enforcement. It's an important part of the equation. And so I don't have to wonder what's going to happen if down the line that occurs. It's already happening when it comes to fentanyl in China. At this point in time, more than 80% of the heroin packets are contaminated with fentanyl. And quite frankly, it's infinitely more powerful than heroin. And fentanyl right now, made in China, is killing more people than heroin is. And watch, it's going to get progressively worse as time goes by.
Now, Jeff Reynolds, we are subjected to looking at Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey doing these commercials in which he's urging people with opioid problems to come in and seek help. They won't get arrested. They'll get treatment. He has become the spokesperson for the president's effort around the country to rein in this this massive problem. But I notice in the Trump budget, at least initially, they've actually cut the amount of money that would be utilized to take people who have a problem and get them help. So what's the point of doing these commercials, of having spokespersons, campaigns, if you don't have the dollars behind it to get the treatment necessary for the addicts?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And in fact, the discussions about the Affordable Care Act are really significant. And I think everybody agrees changes need to be made. But some of the changes being proposed potentially take 20 million people struggling with addiction and separate them from their health care. Guess what they're going to do? They're going to go on Medicaid. And guess who pays for that? You and I pay for that, as opposed to the private insurers. You know, the president has assembled a new task force. It's crazy. We don't need more blue ribbon panels and task forces. The president fired a surgeon general who had produced a very, very, very comprehensive and widely regarded report about how to solve this crisis, taking a bunch of very clear and concise steps. We don't need a bunch of guys sitting around a table in D.C. trying to figure out what to do. We know how to solve this crisis. And I can tell you, one of the surest ways to make it worse is to cut funding for treatment and to make changes in the ACA that separate people from their health insurance. So I really worry, you know, without getting political, I worry that we're going backwards, that we're talking a good game. And if the actions don't follow, that death toll in 2000 for the rest of 17 and 18 is only going to continue to mount.
Do appreciate that, Jeff Reynolds, president and CEO of Family and Children's Association. Interesting that he says that under the new revisions of Obamacare, many more addicts would be thrown into the use of Medicaid, which then would have them going to Medicaid mills, where Medicaid doctors would be writing script, making a lot of money for the Medicaid mill, but feeding the beast. So it's almost like a dog chasing its tail. And these Medicaid mills, they must be cracked down on. I mean, massively. We're not talking about a cherry-picking arrest or two, but a massive crackdown to get the point across to these doctors that you cannot feed the beast of these addicts at taxpayers' expense. Classic Led Zeppelin, a breakdown in communication which exists as Andrew Evilized Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Bruta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, will not talk to Comrade Bill de Blasio, your mayor, not my mayor, I didn't vote for him, and vice versa. De Blasio will not talk to Cuomo over any issues, but especially the rapid decay and the falling apart of our MTA system, especially that services subway riders on the IRT IND BMT. To fill the void just in the last week alone, we heard from mayoral Democratic and Reform Party candidate Sal Albanese, who said, unlike the mayor, he would contribute more of the city budget to help in the repair and maintenance of the subway system. And then just yesterday, State Senator Democrat Gennaris of Queens said there should be a special tax on the rich in the lower county areas to subsidize the repair of the MTA system, and that would include not just subways, but the LIRR Metro North. And Governor Cuomo has claimed that he is conducting a talent hunt for geniuses and is prepared to give our hard-earned tax dollars, $1 million grants, to geniuses who can come up with a plan to repair the subway system. On the line, though, is New York Daily News columnist Gersh Kuntzman, who is basically saying oofa to all of that because his target is the MTA. Am I correct on that, Gersh?
Well, I'm not only targeting the MTA. Obviously, I'm targeting state lawmakers who have not done enough to either fund this agency or to hold it accountable. Look, they're losing the ground war. And when I talk about the ground war, they're talking about public opinion. If you look at Twitter all day long and people's Facebook pages, even if the subways are not actually getting worse and worse and worse, but merely just bad, everybody finishes his commute and tweets, oh my God, the MTA screwed me today again. So Governor Cuomo has to know that he's lost public opinion. He needs to act.
But if you notice, it's finger pointing. He points the finger at de Blasio. De Blasio points the finger back. Their inability to pick up a phone and have just a sane and sober conversation about what both can do, I think probably agitates everyone even more.
Well, that's certainly true, but I certainly blame the governor on this. The governor controls 6 members of the 11-member MTA board. The notion that the governor doesn't control the MTA is a fallacy. It is true that Sal Albanese has asked for the city to put more of the city budget into the MTA, but even that would be a drop in the bucket, even what Sal is calling for, and it's ultimately a state responsibility.
So if you were an advisor, a consigliere to Cuomo right now, who would like to become the next president of the United States, although this is a big one hanging around his neck, his failure to be able to get the trains to run on time like Mussolini, who should maybe be his role model. What would you be telling him?
Well, first of all, I would tell him stop losing the public opinion battle. Be very much out front. And you know what? If he wants to run against de Blasio on this issue, he should, because he's the only guy who can actually fix it. Don't worry so much about de Blasio. Just keep devoting resources. Now, I would also have a much larger plan, and you're going to hate this, Curtis, because I'm a tax and spend Democrat, and I do believe if taxes or bonds need to be raised or issued to fix the MTA, I do believe the vast majority of New York residents, and I'm talking about the state, would support that because everyone knows the importance of the subway. We cannot live without it.
So your idea would be to basically pass on the bill to our children and children's children's generation.
Well, maybe not our children's children, but I would pass on the bill because our children and our children's children will certainly benefit from a high-tech, modern subway. Look, we got 9 million people in this city, or at least going up to 9 million. Every one of them benefits from the subway, even the people who don't use it. Even the drivers benefit. Even the cyclists benefit. And the pedestrians certainly benefit. We all benefit from a functioning subway system.
But the person that has the deep pockets that could come to the rescue is the President of the United States, a guy who grew up in New York, occasionally rode the subways himself. But if de Blasio and Cuomo keep bashing the president, the likelihood is he's not going to loosen up the purse strings.
Well, that's a wonderful situation we find ourselves in. When the president is criticized, he suddenly decides he doesn't want to act on an issue. That's absurd. I also think it's absurd that Donald Trump ever rode the subway, despite his claims to the contrary. Look, the fact is, the president says he wants to do a massive infrastructure investment, but then when you actually peel back the skin on that, it's really just a lot of public-private partnerships that will end up benefiting big business. No, what we need to do is fund the MTA and hold it accountable, whether it's the president or the governor.
Now, with all the modern technology, especially with your hipster millennial generation, Gersh Kuntzman.
53 years old, yes.
People who love to communicate back and forth, and they kvetch. Like you said, we have a commuter whiner line here at WABC that's packed all the time with people complaining. They call 212-613-3878, and then we air their complaints, and they're all valid. But I don't get a sense that there's going to be anything that comes from the commuters themselves, even though they're in contact with one another through Twitter, through Facebook, through Instagram, through all other means. I don't get a sense that outrage is going to lead to any form of insurrection or in terms of these commuters hitting the barricades.
Well, it's funny. Are you advocating violent reaction? I think what they're doing is using Twitter as a form of a public revolution. We are basically agitating in a nonviolent way to say to the government, look, we know that this emperor has no clothes, whether it's Andrew Cuomo or President Trump. You got to act. We are on this. It's not like in the old days when people sort of had to suffer in silence. We're in this together. The MTA can't order us to work different shifts like they did a couple of weeks ago. We have to fight them this way. And I don't know why you're calling for violent insurrection.
No, I'm not saying violence, but I find that it's more like a form of self-relief. You could tweet your life away. You could Facebook it to a live FaceTime, you know, in which you're screaming, hollering, and yelling. Yet they're going to go like lemmings and reelect this mayor probably, and maybe in another year reelect Governor Cuomo, give him a shot at the presidency. So where is the outrage being fomented in terms of organizing that these folks are going to have to get across to the politicians that there are political consequences for their inaction? And I don't see that emerging from your fellow millennials and hipsters and yuppies.
Well, you can complain about us, but it's the candidates. Who is the legitimate, and really, and don't say Nicole Malliotakis, who's the legitimate challenger to de Blasio? Who's going to emerge as the legitimate challenger to Cuomo? Look, if you put up a candidate like a Sal Albanese, I'll tell you, I've already endorsed Sal Albanese for mayor. So don't blame the millennials. I need candidates. I need candidates who actually are alternatives, not just people running it as a vanity project.
A pox on you, Gersh Kuntzman, as you take the F train each day to the slope where you hang out with your train. Deutsch Freakazoid Jet Setters. There'll be more Schwitzes for you this summer because your governor, Cuomo, has warned you, Gersh. I'm going to let you hear it again.
It will be a summer of hell for commuters.
Are you ready for your Schwitz?
No, I'm a cyclist, so it's never a summer of hell for me.
Oh, cyclists. Oh, mm-hmm. So you're out there getting crushed by buses as we speak, huh?
I believe that they should do more of an investigation whenever a cyclist is killed. The two guys who were killed in Chelsea last week were both killed by buses, and no one has been held accountable. So we should talk about that someday.
Okay, Pee Wee Herman, of all columnists that write on a regular basis for all of you, it's Gersh Kunstman of the New York Daily News. Go online, look at a lot of his columns, and get a few belly laughs as you're at it. As we continue here on the Drive Home at 5 with yours truly, Curtis Sliwa. Remember, it was just last Friday, President Trump headed down to Miami, was embraced by the Cuban-American community because he said that he would roll back the openness that Barack Obama had extended to Raul Castro, Fidel Castro, behind the sugarcane curtain of Cuba, in terms of the restrictions that he had removed on trade and travel there. And then, partway through his speech, he mentioned that the former president had failed to secure the return of Joanne Chesimard, who had killed a New Jersey state trooper, and 50 others who Castro has given sanctuary to, who are wanted in the United States. On the line to discuss that is Mike Kelly, columnist for The Record. Thanks for joining us again on the Drive Home at 5, Mike.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Curtis.
So naturally, all eyes look to New Jersey when President Trump mentioned the return of Joanne Chesimard. She's in Cuba now. Tell us a little bit about her and why it's such a linchpin in the way the way our reaction in America goes towards open trade and open travel to Cuba.
Oh, yeah. Curtis, this is like a trip back in history, a piece of history that we don't really talk about very much anymore. But the 1970s in America, there was a lot of revolutionary terrorism going on from the Weather Underground, from other groups. Joanne Chesimard was a member of the Black Liberation Army. This was a group that carried out a number of attacks and bank robberies and things like that, and murders of police officers in New York City and also on the Jersey Turnpike. Chesimard was traveling south with two other Black Liberation Army operatives in May of 1973. She was pulled over by a state trooper, and a gunfight erupted. One state trooper was wounded, another was killed, shot in the head, according to the evidence. Chesimard was captured along with another one of her operatives, and the third one was killed. She was put on trial, convicted in the killing, and sentenced to prison. And then 6 years later, 1979, she breaks out of prison in New Jersey and goes underground and makes her way to Cuba, where Fidel Castro gives her political asylum and hails her as a revolutionary hero. She's been there ever since. And I went down there about a year and a half ago to try to track her down. I found her house, but with a $2 million bounty on her head, she's in hiding. I did speak to another fugitive down there, Sherry Dalton, who drove the getaway car in Chesimard's breakout and was also involved in the 1981 Brinks robbery up in Nanuet, Rockland County, where three law enforcement officers were killed. And I spoke to her. She speaks regularly with Chesimard on the phone. And the two of them are grandmothers. They're down there. I also found Guillermo Willie Morales.
Ah, No Hands Morales.
That's right. The Puerto Rican nationalist, FALN bomb maker, who built the bomb that blew up Francis Tavern that killed a man from Fairlawn. So we don't talk about these murders much anymore. They really are acts of terrorism. And what was surprising to me, and I've written a lot about this, is when Obama opened the door to Cuba, his people didn't make one public utterance that there were fugitives down there. And there were other fugitives down there, a guy who murdered a police officer in New Mexico in 1971, Victor Garena, who was involved in the major bank robbery in Connecticut. And there's, as you correctly mentioned, there's about 50 total fugitives. Most of them are involved with smaller crimes like fraud, that sort of thing. The big ones, though, the top five at the top of the list, the most violent, are Chesimard.
So why do you think that Raul Castro, who's inherited the leadership from his brother Fidel, mm-hmm. would continue to protect them when opening up borders with America for trade and for travel would rescue the economy of that country that has no more Medicis. There's no more old Soviet Union to handle them. Chavez is long gone. Venezuela is falling into the abyss. Why would he stubbornly continue to defend these 50 who do nothing for Cuba now?
Well, that's interesting, Curtis, but his feet haven't been held to the fire yet. See, I would have been interested in, had Obama done that. Had Obama said, listen, Raul, we're happy to open all the doors. We'll let all the cruise ships come in. We'll let the commercial airlines come in. We'll let all the gringos come down from America with their dollars, and we'll pump up the economy. But we want one thing. We want the murderers back here. And he never did that. So will Trump's people do it? We'll see. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what Raul Castro says, because this is one of those moments where, you know, it's like in The Godfather, they make deals, you know, where it benefits one side, it also benefits the other. I don't see where Chesimard's useful anymore as a propaganda tool for the Cubans. And when that happens, she'll be on a jet coming home. Before you can say Joanne Chesimard.
Well, you know,
we haven't gotten to that point yet.
Interesting. The old remnants of Alpha 66. That's Mike Kelly, columnist for The Record. And Willie No Hands Morales. People don't realize this. He blew up his hands off his skeletal body in manufacturing a bomb for the FALN and then escaped from the Bellevue jail. That's right, the Bellevue Hospital jail. He was on the fourth floor. And he shimmied down sheets that had been tied together. Now, how the hell did he do that with no hands? You know he had help on the inside. No one, I mean no one, ever got indicted or arrested for that crime. Keep it suit up. If you bottles don't want to dance on board, then keep it true up. I'm gangsta. Oh, these hip-hop, reggaeton, degenerate monsters. This is the theme song, in English, of course. For MS-13. And again, they were the focus of an investigation that was conducted by Congressman Peter King out in Central Islip, the federal courthouse, today.
MS-13 is a morally depraved transnational murderous gang which terrorizes innocent people.
Ah, wow. Did you tell us something we didn't already know, Congressman Peter King? And he welcomed a wide array of experts, the same experts from Suffolk and Nassau County that have continued to allow MS-13 to flex and to become the most powerful street gang now in the nation. The epicenter of activity is out in Suffolk County. And I say to myself, out of a lexicon of different so-called experts, I wasn't asked to come out there. I've been battling as leader of the Guardian Angels MS-13 since they were spawned in the streets of L.A. in the Rampart section, as an adversary of the 18th Street Gang, which represented the Mexican-American community. They formed MS-13 to protect themselves against the Mexicans and then did what all gangs do, preyed upon their own, extorted, shook down money, and that is their lifeline. Not selling drugs, not selling weapons, which would be an easy intervention for law enforcement because you go undercover, you buy and bust, you buy and bust. That's not what MS-13 does for obvious reasons. They spread to Fairfax outside of Washington, D.C. and Virginia, and then to Suffolk and Nassau counties in Long Island. So speaking today as an expert who hasn't done jack diddly squat to solve the problem is the Suffolk County Police Chief, who wanted to praise the community.
The community has been tremendous. I know oftentimes the media wants to portray this picture of a community that's not willing to come forward, but it simply doesn't jive with reality.
Lies, lies, and more lies. Come on. Yeah, you made a few dozen arrests out in Suffolk County, as they have in Nassau County, of MS-13 gangbangers. And whoever you've arrested and locked up in the county jails, they've gone on to recruit in the county jails to support their membership in terms of local recruitment. But then there are the continued numbers of young men that are sent from El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras to nourish their ranks in Nassau and Suffolk County. That was never mentioned today. But to suggest that it is the community itself, the immigrant community, that needs to be praised for dropping dime on these monsters of mayhem, that's just not the case. There is no incentive. The last time Jeff Sessions was there, our attorney general, at that same federal courthouse in Central Islip, he says, I don't understand. Why don't they just call 911? Are you kidding? First off, the community, the immigrant community, is not reporting on MS-13 membership because of retribution, retaliation. There is no witness protection program so that if you do come forward to give testimony in federal court or any of the local courts, you will at least know that you and your family will be protected thereafter as you get placed out in Wyoming, you get placed in Montana, or places where MS-13 doesn't exist. That doesn't happen now. And also, there is no reward system. Why not promise the fast track to the green card to citizenship for those in the immigrant community who come forward to help cold bust those who are responsible as MS-13 members for committing crimes and the conspiracy to commit crimes? And by the way, as everyone was glad-handing themselves today in that federal courthouse in Central Islip, they still have not arrested the MS-13 gangbangers responsible for the 4 killings of young black males that were laid out in a park in Central Islip right before Good Friday. So stop dancing the whore and the tarantella. Stop declaring yourselves to be experts. And let's get down to the nitty-gritty and how to break the back of MS-13, of which you are not doing it either in Suffolk or Nassau County, Congressman Peter King.